Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai Fam, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday, at 11 o'clock, and we discuss different topics, different things that we can and need to discuss to learn and grow and achieve. And what will the knowledge bring us today that will help us grow, help us influence our families, our friends, ourselves, just be the people we want to be in the world we want to be in. And today's topic that we're going to be discussing almost feels like it's gone viral in the past few years. We're going to be speaking about autism, about the spectrum, what it means, right? Sometimes it feels like there were times that everybody was with ADHD, and now we're at the phase that everybody's with spectrum. And then there's many questions about the different areas of the aspect of the spectrum, etc. And this is a very important discussion. I will say at the start, though, I think that South Africa has shifted tremendously in the last decade with awareness, with understanding, with professional options. Personally, about 10 years ago, certain aspects of spectrum, I would send my clients overseas to get diagnosed, and now we have it all here. So there's a lot to talk about. And that's exactly what we're going to be now, doing now and today. So firstly, I'll introduce our guests, as we always do. I'm going to start with Ilana Gershonovitz. Ilana, you are the author of Saving My Boys, and as well as the director at Star Academy and Catch Up Kids. Good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So before we go on, Ilana, do you want to introduce yourself?
22 years ago, the word autism rang through my ears when my oldest son, David, was diagnosed with autism at the age of 20 months, and we were told goodbye and good luck, accepted, nothing you can do, unfortunately. But Rabbi, as they say, worried moms do better research than the FBI, and that's exactly what I did when my son was diagnosed with autism.
And that was before ChatGPT.
That was before ChatGPT. I also wrote my book, Saving My Sons, A Journey with Autism, before ChatGPT, which I'm very happy about.
Yes. Okay. So that's when you started your journey in searching into it and has done many work in South Africa and outside South Africa.
Correct. So when our son was diagnosed with autism, our whole world fell to pieces. And it was very, very scary because, you know, autism is a spectrum disorder. As when you have a young developing child receiving a diagnosis, you just don't know what it's going to look like in the future. I was pregnant with my second at the time. So it was this gray cloud that descended upon us. And fast forward 20 years, I've been the director of the Star Academy, which caters for the learning needs of children with autism, not only in South Africa, but actually globally now. We service parents in the UK, in Mauritius, in Africa, in Australia, and then also Catch Up Kids, that works with the learner who's got ADHD or falling behind in the classroom.
Okay, well, that's quite a bit. Our second guest today on the show is Raf. Raf, you are a young psychology student, mm-hmm. and you were diagnosed on the spectrum at an older age.
Yeah, around like 17, 16.
16, 17 is when you got your official diagnosis. So firstly, good morning and thank you for being with us.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and we're just starting our great show today. Topic today is autism. And right before the break, we spoke to someone you all know already for many times, Ilana Gershonovitz. And then we are about to say good morning to our second guest, Raf. Introduce yourself.
Hello. I'm a 24-year-old psychology student finishing my honors. As was mentioned before, was diagnosed with autism like when I was 16, 17.
You're sitting next to a mom mm. who's devoted her life to autism spectrum, or actually people with autism, and connecting. As someone who was diagnosed with autism, and we speak often about don't talk about us, talk to us. Mm. What do you wish moms would know about their children with autism?
I think what would have benefited me when I was growing up would be for my mom to understand specifically like the concept of being overwhelmed. I don't know, that's not the
meltdowns.
Right. Meltdowns, okay. Exactly, or shutdowns, because that was the thing that I struggled with the most, in that I didn't really, because I was diagnosed much later on, no one really knew, I didn't know, my parents didn't know what I would be going through, you know, maybe if I had a tough day at school, or even just like being very social with a lot of people would be very draining, and that would, you know, make me more overwhelmed, which for me, I wouldn't really get meltdowns, I would get shutdowns. So knowing about that and kind of what it was would have been helpful to just, you know, make my school life smoother, make my home life smoother when, you know, I had maybe chores to do or homework and I just wasn't in the headspace to actually get anything done because I was having a shutdown. So
that's fascinating, because you're talking about the shutdowns that you had. Mm. Just to say, I do know your parents, and they took you as a child to every therapy possible, and they tried everything to support you. It was unknown, yes, at the time, very difficult. What does a shutdown look like from a parent's point of view? How would they identify it, Ilana?
It's such a good question, but I just wanted to compliment Raf on his answer and on being able to express what it felt like to have those episodes, those shutdowns. Mm. I have a 23-year-old, profoundly autistic son who can't express what it feels like when he has a shutdown because he's nonverbal and he communicates only for his basic needs on an iPad. So I just want to start by saying that the spectrum of autism is so broad. On the one hand, yeah, we have this lovely boy, Raf, who his parents can be so proud of sitting here today, you know, sharing what you went through, and you can be so proud, and they can be so proud.
And he is very successful.
Of your achievements. Now, my profoundly autistic son, David, wouldn't be able to sit here, you know, and express that at all. In fact, I'm his caregiver, not his parent. And so, Rabbi, I think it's very important for your listeners today to know that the spectrum of autism is very, very broad. And so both ends of the spectrum, when they are having a shutdown or a meltdown, are definitely presenting with those emotions and those behaviors because of developmental skills deficit. So no matter where you are on the spectrum, at the Star Academy, what we do is we focus on teaching developmental skill acquisition to reduce these presentations, to help the individual and the children to cope in situations that make them maybe socially overwhelmed, for example. And Raf, I'm sure over the time you learned your emotional coping skills. So when...
But Ilana, I want to stop you for a second, because you're going to step two, which is the tools you have to offer, and, you know,
yes,
we have with our OTs and with sensory and with emotional regulation, and there's endless stuff we can use.
And with ABA, which is what we do, applied behavior analysis.
Yeah, and DIR, and the debate we can have about that. What Raf is coming and saying, step before that, is I wish somebody would have known, seen, and understood, even before solutions. Mm-hmm. How do we identify that, and how would we potentially show the child on the spectrum, even if they're very high, you know, high up, they're functioning, managing, etc., that we actually understand and we actually there to help, and then we can go to solutions. But beforehand, just that understanding and not feeling so alone in that journey.
That's a very complex answer, because we have a diverse spectrum. So that answer,
correct,
would differ depending on if the individual is profoundly autistic or on the high end of the spectrum. Let's take, for example, my profoundly autistic son who would have a meltdown. Before I can explain to him that it's okay and I understand, he would need certain skills like compliance, like being able to understand that a word belongs to a certain object or to a certain emotion. So it's very, very difficult to answer that generally. If we're looking at the higher end of the spectrum, you know, they have more cognitive ability. So obviously acknowledging them, making sure that they feel safe, making feel sure that they feel heard. And I think what works is very different for each individual. Some higher functioning individuals on the spectrum, it works if they can draw how they're feeling. So maybe getting that them as a pair. As a parent, you'll say to your child, draw how you're feeling. Or, you know, if they more, some like to write to you. We've had a lot of autistic children that like to write how they're feeling, and then the parent can understand versus vocally explaining. So I think it's very different for every individual. I don't think there's one easy answer, but Rabbi Gardner, we need to dismantle the spectrum because, you know, it looks very different for a screaming, profoundly autistic 5-year-old on the spectrum and a high functioning 5-year-old who can express themselves.
Right. And yet sometimes I will see a successful married businessman who is on the spectrum and sitting on a plane with a screaming baby not far from them and with the claustrophobia and everything, and having a similar reasoning of a meltdown than a child who is feeling that their world is being crushed. It will look different. It will feel potentially different. Yet there is a foundational connection many times between the spectrum that we're looking at. So, yes, it's extreme. It is different. Its manifesting is different. Maybe even the reaction is different. It's more controlled than with an adult sometimes. And we have that. But we do have that overwhelmed feeling that the adult may have. Often I would see, you know, these reports about somebody who had a meltdown on a flight and was taken out. And I ask myself, is this person struggling with their sensory? Is this person struggling with communication, with nonverbal communication? Maybe we should be looking different, which is a different topic, but of banning someone from life from flying before we, you know, jump so fast to conclusions.
It comes down to teaching missing skills to change behavior, whether you're the baby screaming or whether you're the higher functioning adult. At the end of the day, they're missing skills that can be taught to help Correct. Those people cope. And that's really where ABA comes in.
Okay. So we'll go into that deeper right after the break. In the meantime, we'll take a short break and we will continue. We are here, if you're just joining now, discussing autism from many different aspects and a very important discussion with a professional and/parent and with a psychology student who has been diagnosed himself.
Learn more at loveyourfellow.com.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are here. I'm here with Ilana Gershonovitz, who is the author of Saving My Sons, My Boys, My Sons?
My Sons.
My Sons. Okay, I always get confused. And the director at Star Academy and Catch Up Kids, who does a large variety of work within the community and around the world, as well as Raf, who is a psychology student who is diagnosed on the spectrum. And right before the break, you started speaking about ABA. Let's talk about ABA and what ABA's method on a very general level is.
Applied behavior analysis is a methodology of teaching rooted in psychology based on positive reinforcement. It's a methodology of teaching, so it provides teaching strategy. It's the how do we teach? How do we prompt the child, for example? If we prompt them, how are we going to fade our prompts? When we follow ABA, we take data. We make recommendations based on data. ABA is a scientific methodology, and it is the first line treatment for autism in America, certainly covered in all the states under medical insurance.
Okay. So the aspects of applied behavior is one area. You also mentioned about the filling in the lacking skills, skill-based.
That's
elaborate on that.
Love your question. At the SAR Academy, we use a very comprehensive developmental curriculum. That's actually our blueprint. 20 years ago, I established SAR Academy with a collaboration of our American organization, one of the world leaders in autism treatment, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders. And we collaborate with them and use their comprehensive developmental curriculum. So at the end of the day, whenever we have an autism diagnosis, we're going to be looking at a child or individual who's got missing skills. So we will assess their social skills, motor, language, executive functioning, that's a big one, cognition, academic, play skills and interests. And then we're going to do an IEP, an individualized education plan, for each child or individual on the spectrum, determining the missing skills. We then customize lesson programs to teach developmental skill acquisition. And that's how we change behavior. If they have social skills deficits, we teach those. The children are completely different, so we never group them together in one classroom. And then also we're going to implement the program in the learning environment where the child is going to learn best. So, Rabbi, some children we actually facilitate in mainstream schools, at Curos, at Crawford, at the international schools. And some children we do home programs. Some children, come to our academies. It's very learner-specific.
So it's very individual-based and working with them within the structure. Your experience as someone who was mainstream and, majority of your school journey was with lack of understanding of autism spectrum, etc. What are the challenges that you would say from your point of view are being in mainstream and being on the spectrum?
For me, I would say my biggest challenge in school was actually focusing in the classes. I found that the pacing for me was not necessarily too slow, but too repetitive, in that it was hard for me to concentrate because I just felt like it was a lot of repetition, going over. Like, once I understood a concept, I understood it, and I could move on. But we would go over it.
Right. That's a very important point, because often when teachers teach or people communicate, we will repeat the same thing often, a lot verbally, yet every time with a different tone of voice, every time with a different context, so it's not boring and it does have a different meaning. But when you are not comprehending the tone of voice and you're not picking up the differences in language based on context, then it just sounds like the same sentence again and again and again and again until you lose your mind.
Yes.
So based on what you're saying, if we want to have a child mainstream, we will need to teach them also the nonverbal communication to understand the context and to understand the tone of voice that is saying this. No, it's not the same words again and again. It's actually a different angle.
Yes.
Okay. I'm actually going to go to you, Ilana. How do you do that?
You do that, first of all, by relying on the principles of applied behavior analysis. That's going to give you strategy. That's the platform of teaching. And then how you're going to do that is to do an assessment of that individual to determine, in all the areas that I just mentioned, what exact developmental skills they're missing. So, for example, Raf, you mentioned that it wasn't easy to focus in the classroom. So, Rabbi, when we're assessing a learner who's struggling to focus in the classroom, we're going to determine, have they got inhibition? Have they got waiting? So can they delay gratification? And every developmental skill is broken down into tiny, tiny little sub-skills. So we're going to customize a program to teach those sub-skills relevant to the skill that the individual is missing. So in order to sustain attention, you need waiting. You need to have shifting attention. That's a different skill to sustaining attention. You need auditory processing. Yes. And your auditory processing skills worked in a different way. So we need to practice
those. There's
another
angle here. And the angle is the identifying tone of voice and identifying the context of the discussion. It's not necessarily, when Raf was speaking first about the repetitive and boring, it's not the lack of focus, it's that repetitive boring. What are the ABA tools we have to learn that?
Well, we would go to our developmental curriculum and we would look in the social skills domain so that we could find the missing skills and teach them. Picking up basic social skills, picking up basic social cues is going to be one of them. And so part of that is going to be understanding when, you know, the teacher's tone of voice changes, when it's louder and when it's softer. So we would go into the curriculum to find what skills they're missing. Maybe for some learners on the spectrum, loud noise, you know, is an issue because they do present with sensory challenges. But then we're going to help them. Actually, Rabbi, we have a desensitization program for a lot of the learners who present with sensory issues, because ultimately, at the end of the day, we want inclusive education. Look at Raf. Look at how wonderful he is. Raf, you're amazing. I hope your parents are listening and very proud of you today. Look at you. You're studying psychology. You did it. You made it. You crossed the line. Rabbi, we've got, you know, autism
Raf
is
didn't
a...
say you're almost finished psychology. You're not studying psychology.
Right. So, but you know, we have children who may never get there one day and who we don't know what their future is going to look like. At the Star Academy, we work with children who still, you know, they come to us at 5 and 7 when they're in diapers and have been running around to all the wrong therapies, unfortunately and sadly, and been wasting their time. And now they're nonverbal and they're in a nappy and they can't express themselves. Can you imagine? You can. Can you imagine being 7 years old and not having a means to express yourself? And that's why, Rabbi, it's so important that the early intervention is key.
100%, and the earlier the better. You know, I just want to comment about that one thing, because often listeners remind me about, if you can just give us sometimes practicality and things. So, you know, the one you mentioned, which is quite a big one, regarding the ability to identify the tone of voice, and a parent would ask, okay, how am I going to know about my child? So what I've found, and you could... I'd love to hear your feedback on that as well, Nana. But for my practice and our school and the work we do, what I found very consistently that when a parent speaks to their child and has to repeat themselves, so for example, calling your child for supper, and then they come again and they repeat again and then repeat again. And then eventually the child will look at them and say, "Why are you screaming?" Meaning the child did not understand and feel the change of tone of voice until the aggression kicked in. Or they'll say, "Why are you saying it so many times?" Okay? Often that can be a sign that you just want to explore. Why is your child saying you? Why are you repeating it so many times? I'm repeating it so many times because you're ignoring me. That's why I'm repeating it so many times. But if the child's not picking that up, that could be a bit of a lack, or that suddenly they feel the change and they didn't notice that gradual shift. Ilana, your thoughts?
Well, in ABA, we wouldn't repeat it so many times. You give an instruction once, and then if the child or individual doesn't comply with the instruction, you go, you get up, you go find where they are, and then you either help them come to the dinner table.
But ABA would come in after diagnosis. I'm talking to a parent who's sitting and has no idea.
Okay. Well, you know, The same would go really, Rabbi, is that if you're going to continuously say to the child, "Come here, come here, come here," they're going to learn that, you know, on the fifth time the parent calls me, that's when I'll decide to turn around. If it's an older child as well, I would advise that the parent, actually, if the child's got a phone, I've seen this work brilliantly, is that you call the child once, if they don't come, you then type the message. That slows the child down. If they can read, and reading is a strong skill, and high-functioning individuals often have reading as a strong skill, some of them, then it can slow them down, and they can process and read the instruction, and then type and, you know, actually type back to say, "I need 5 minutes." I have seen it really working very, very well when autistic individuals get really upset in the heat of the moment. They'll shut down, so they're not auditory processing and they're not listening to you anymore. That's when, you know, maybe writing to them. Or if they're visual learners, you know, maybe you can draw a visual.
Right, 100%. Now, that's definitely very practical, very useful. Use that method so many times when I have married couples that one of them's on the spectrum, and that communication when you're very angry and the, you know, conflict is going in circles. Rafa, how is your schooling different before the diagnosis and after the diagnosis?
I would say after the diagnosis, I got a lot more answers. Well, I should say, a place that I struggled also with a lot was the reason why I was doing things. like why I was learning certain things, you know, why I had to do this, why I had to do that. After the diagnosis, I got a lot more explanations as to why, because people understood that was an important aspect of like me wanting to do something. So for example, you know, the being called for supper, there could be the question of why do I have to come now? Can't I come in half an hour? So getting that explanation of why I should be doing this and why I should be learning this math thing or whatever subject I, you know, didn't understand what the point of it was because I didn't see a practical, you know, need for it in adulthood. You know, even if the explanation was something like, oh, you are learning this to, you know, exercise your brain, so to say, or like that why afterwards helped me a lot to actually, you know, do the things that I didn't want to do or didn't necessarily understand.
So amazing. That, so that's fascinating for me in two aspects. Number one, the questioning. You're saying, why do I have to come for dinner now? I could come in 30 minutes. But also, I'm wondering if you actually communicated that question, meaning you were called for dinner and you said, hey, why can't I not come in 30 minutes? Or you just ignored and...
I would say it was more often I wouldn't communicate, you know, my questions of why, especially if it wasn't a... Like if someone was just calling me, we're not having a conversation. If I was having a conversation, like about whatever topic, then I would sometimes ask the why. But a lot of times, at least when I was younger, the adults wouldn't give like the answer. It would just be because this is how it is, rather than, you know,
explaining.
Because it's good for you, because it's part of the curriculum, whatever it is.
So it would just be in your side, and the lack of communication would definitely make it harder. Ilana, what are the signs you would tell parents to look out for that would make them go for a diagnosis or to figure out things?
I'm so glad we're talking about this, because autism can be diagnosed in a young developing child at 18 months. It was incorrectly believed in South Africa that autism can only be diagnosed at 3. This is incorrect. And in fact, we can pick up the red flags to autism in a young developing child.
So just
very early on. Let me just finish.
Let me just defend South Africa. It was incorrectly thought in many, many countries around the world. But that has changed.
You know, Rabbi, I was at the other end of South Africa thinking the wrong way, and so has many parents been. I must tell
Correct.
You, it's not been a pretty picture. And in fact, I think the psychiatrists and the neurodevelopmental specialists who are still diagnosing are still 20 years behind believing that autism is not a treatable diagnosis. There are children that can also make a 360-degree degree recovery from autism. But too much to talk about. Let's talk about and certainly how they dish out psychiatric medication as first line treatment, which it shouldn't be, is something that absolutely horrifies me. They're giving 2 and 3 year olds psychiatric medication that have got serious side effects. It's certainly not the way to go, and especially now that we know there's a gut brain connection. But yes, let's talk about those red flags to autism that the nursery school teacher should be looking out for in a young developing child. Are they making eye contact? Do they respond to their name? Can they imitate? Is their language developing on time? Are they pointing with Peter Pointer about 18 months? About 18 months, you want double words. And so are they walking on their toes? Are they flapping their hands? Are they playing appropriately with their toys? So, you know, early intervention is key. Every year a child has a birthday, more and more is expected of them developmentally. And if you read my book, you'll see that there was a recovery from autism in my family. And so, that was because we started very, very early on. And so if my son, who made a recovery, was only diagnosed with autism at 3, I don't think we would have had the same results. And that's why for the OTs listening today and the speech therapists listening today and the medical professionals listening today, you can make a diagnosis by 18 months. Your patients also do not need to stand in line for 6 months for a neuro appointment to do, the ADOS test. The ADOS test has really become obsolete.
Right. There is, however, again, going back to the spectrum, there are times that it won't be apparent yet. Yes, when there's more severe autism or more developmental delays at a younger age, then it will be able to, we will be able to identify the red flags earlier. Can we look at a alternative set of red flags for the kids that are on a higher functioning level, mm-hmm. that it won't show yet on that regard, that they will be able to fit in and will only start seeing big gaps at a much older age? Sometimes even at 6 years old, we'll see a bigger gap, and at seven, and sometimes even later.
So
what would be look for?
So before I tell you what we would look for, I just want to mention that we have to be very careful, because I also believe there is over-diagnosing, and especially in South Africa as well. You know, teachers tend to go, oh, he's on the spectrum, you know. I've heard Correct. This quite often, and, you know, autism is defined in terms of the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistics Manual. There are very specific criteria to get an autism diagnosis, and I think, Rabbi, you'll agree with me that you can also have stuff that you have deficits in. So, for example, you can have some social skills deficits or some executive functioning skills deficits. Hey, Raf, that doesn't necessarily – you can have a bag of deficits, but that doesn't necessarily put you on the autism spectrum. So I do want to caution people, because just because an individual has some skills deficit, it doesn't automatically mean they're on the spectrum. But to quickly answer, in a six-year-old, they're going to be struggling to establish and maintain friendships. They need to stick to routine, and they're not coping in the classroom. They're falling behind their peers.
Okay, we'll see often.
We're running out of time.
Yeah, maybe fixation and the same topic again and again, and
yes, OCD, less of
a broader topic. Yeah, so there's a very right before we go to the break, I'll tell you, it was very interesting. I gave a training to professionals about the difference between autism spectrum and social anxiety. And it was fascinating to see how difficult it was for them to actually see the difference. And obviously the treatment is different, the life, everything's different, but the symptoms are so similar. And in a world that we diagnose based on symptoms, sometimes it can become tricky. And I think part of being careful not to overdiagnose is learning what the other things are.
I love that. And I'm so happy you mentioned that, because sometimes it's just social anxiety, and those individuals with social anxiety will also sometimes struggle with perspective taking.
Correct. And many angles. We could talk after the break a bit more. 100%.
Torah isn't education. It's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back in the middle of a fascinating discussion. I'm here with Ilana Gershowitz. How did I confuse your name?
Gershlovitz with an L.
I missed that L. Sorry about that. And you haven't commented. Okay. So we're here discussing autism spectrum, your own personal journey. And I think we could already say that you have your personal journey and your public journey, because, you know, from the book yet until the professional work and all the amazing work you've been doing and established, and with Raf, who is on that journey. And right before the break, we spoke about a potential diagnosis that could be confused with autism. Let's look a bit more into that, but very shortly, because I have a more important question to ask. So just, is there anything you want to comment about besides for social anxiety, or something that will very easily confuse with the symptoms?
Yes. We are going to be dismantling the spectrum in the coming years, the sooner the better, because we are comparing apples and oranges at the moment on the various ends of the spectrum. You have a profoundly autistic individual who can't speak at all and who needs 24/7 caregiving, and then they get a diagnosis, they get this word autism labeled to them the same as Raf does, and Yari is, you know, a fully functional adult who can express themselves. So first of all, we need to dismantle the spectrum, and they're going to. I am so happy with the work that Robert Kennedy, the health secretary in America, is doing with autism. I mean, they are starting to recognize the link between vaccines and autism. That is very, very important, a turning point for autism. They are recognizing recently, they came out with a folinic acid treatment. We know over the last 30 years, based on research, that there's a gut-brain connection. We've now learned that autism is a metabolic imbalance, you know, that there's a digestive disorder and that there's immune issues. So I'm very excited about the future, especially with the Kennedy administration and how things are going to change. So what I have to say about that gray, muddy group, you know, a lot of people are going on to TikTok when they have social anxiety and some executive functioning skills deficits and calling it autism. I think we have to be careful of that, and we have to be discouraging people from doing that.
I think a lot of people are going on to keep TikTok and then developing social anxiety and other executive functioning challenges, but that's a different topic. It's interesting because just on one comment that, you know, before the DSM-5, we did have that breakdown. We did have the PDD-NUS and the Asperger's and the function. And for some reason, it was shifted. And I know we're going to go back. I don't want to get stuck. We can go on this for hours. I want to ask you practically, okay? Because we do talk a lot about the gut-brain connection. Mm-hmm. Not only in autism, there's a lot of effects from the gut to the brain. And often when people say, okay, I want to explore it, I want to see, I have a child who's struggling, let me look at the gut, they're told, go first step, try out, go off gluten and milk, and then we'll see. And majority of parents say, thank you, but no thank you, and turn around. What would you say to them, a bit more practically, a bit more ability to explore, is there something that can be done, not to that extreme, that can be helpful as well?
Navigating your child's autism is a choice. It's hard to feed a picky eater, and it's hard to deal with behaviors like anxiety, meltdowns, etc. So choose your hard. Gluten, dairy, soy, sugar are not advisable, period. Get it out of your child's diet. Go and consult a dietitian or nutritionist. You know, we are eating so many foods with MSG. And so choose your hard breakfast. No more cereal, Weet-Bix with dairy milk. Let's focus on feeding nutritious food. I wish the teachers at school would focus on what's in the lunchbox, making sure that the children are actually snacking. They need fuel to get through their day. So many teachers will complain, he's not concentrating, he's not focusing, he's distracted. But are we actually making sure the children are sitting down and eating? They shouldn't be having sweets and fizzes and rubbish from the tuck shop at 10 o'clock. Send a protein shake. You know, have chicken soup for breakfast.
Eating, sleeping the night before. Yeah, 100%.
So we have that gut-brain connection, and there's no getting around it. You know, if you're diabetic, you need insulin and you need a special diet. If you're having a child present with behavioral issues and in a certain way, you need a special diet. Let's do it. Choose your hard.
Okay. So you're saying that there's no really shortcuts in that regard. It's you're in or you're out. Okay. Going to from your side, you know, we often have this debate about the place of autism in society, and have had questions, you know, once a discussion in the forum of people on the spectrum, and we're debating, would they rather date someone on the spectrum or rather date someone not on the spectrum, and how would that affect them? Where do you see your stability of connection within the world? Do you see yourself engaging more with people on the spectrum, with people not on the spectrum? And what do you hope and expect from people not on the spectrum potentially to do or learn in order to engage better?
So, I don't know why this has happened, but I find that I have mostly made friends with people who also are on the spectrum or who have ADHD, so not neurotypical. I find it's just the social aspect of it is easier because we're both kind of operating on the same wavelength, in that if I mess up, they either won't pick it up either because they also have autism and they have the social deficits as well, so it's much more forgiving in that way, or they, you know, do notice, but it's like they understand where you're coming from. Because
would they be able to help you?
But no, they aren't necessarily able to help in terms of giving advice or
as a friend.
Yeah, as a friend. And then in terms of people who aren't autistic, just understanding, again, that there is that social deficit, in that, you know, sometimes I do say the wrong thing. You know, I sometimes don't understand, for example, invites. is something that's difficult. If I'm not invited directly, I don't know if I've been invited with the group or not. You know, all these kind of things, to just understand that even though I am, like, I look functional and, you know, I
and
present.
And you are functional. Yeah.
There is still that social deficit that, you know, I mean, you were even speaking about, like, the social anxiety, that anxiety comes from the fact that I have these social deficits and I'm not sure how people are going to react to them. And, you know, I try not to, you know, say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, but I just don't know. And unless I'm actually taught, you know, like, the different situations and how to respond and what's the appropriate thing to say and do, I don't know what that is. Like, I have no frame of reference for it.
So you're saying basically don't assume I know anything when it comes to social interactions, and just verbalize it. Tell me. Connect and be straightforward about it. Okay? We do need to take a short last break for today. And then when we continue, we're going to head towards wrapping up today's show.
Torah isn't education. It's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back and we're really ending up today's discussion. I think it was a very good one. And I highly recommend that if you are just tuning in now, just go to our podcast. You'll hear all about it and hear from Raf. I think you've brought a very valuable perspective and very good points. I'm going to end off the show with the question I always end off with. I'll start with you, Ilana. What do you wish and hope that we knew or did differently for a better future?
Many years ago, a very, very special doctor, Dr. Unterslack, who passed away a number of years ago, taught me a very, very important concept that kept me going. Remember that my son David, who's profoundly autistic, is completely different to Raf. So I'm not coming from a point of view where I think that autism is a superpower, because my son does not at all present the way Raf presents his autism. And Dr. Unterslack taught me that Hashem created the cure before the illness. And autism is a suffering for many children and many families. Actually, no matter where you are on the spectrum, it can be a suffering. It really can be. There are a lot of individuals that have suicidal ideation, depression, anxiety, etc. And my wish is, as Dr. Unterslack taught me, that in my lifetime, I should find the cure for autism. We should find the cure, and we should be able to heal our children. And that the medical treatments that we now know about should become more medically accessible to individuals and children on the spectrum, because they are suffering, they are in pain, they have a lot of stomach issues, and they feel sick a lot of the time. Some of them can have epilepsy. My wish is also for the spectrum of autism to be dismantled, because that current definition is really blocking the access that profoundly autistic individuals need. You know, parents are full-time caregivers, and people think the first time you say autism, it's, you know, Elon Musk, and it really just isn't. So my wish is also for parents to find the courage and to be the faith to continue to navigate this journey, because it's a tough one. And unless you've walked this road, you cannot know what it means. And so my final word is that the parents should find ways to keep their hope alive, because hope is the best medicine of all.
With you 100% on the suffering and the struggle and hoping for a better future, I hesitate with the word cure, but that's its own discussion. I feel there's many times a lot of pain and difficulty and challenge, and that I really agree that we should have the answer to. I also hope that it happens without losing the benefits and without losing sometimes, not for everybody, not for every level, not for every challenge, but sometimes there is a different way of thinking that is positive, and we should not lose that, but definitely get rid of all the difficulties.
I shall continue davening for the cure, please God.
100%, but definitely all the challenge and pain should go. Raf, what do you wish and hope for a better future?
I wish that people were more, I don't know, understanding and their communication was better, in terms of, like I mentioned before, if I'm doing something wrong, please let me know, rather than, you know, bottling it up and then getting upset later on. So
just be more open and honest and discuss and share. Raf, thank you so much for being with us today. Really, really appreciate it. And it's a lot of important insight. Ilana Gershelovitz, thank you so much for being with us today, author of Saving My Sons and the director of Star Academy and Catch Up Kids, and work here. And thank you for the work you do here and overseas. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Senna, for putting the interviews in place. And thank you to our listeners for being with us week after week. Every Monday, we will be back. Please God, next Monday. In the meantime, enjoy the other shows. They're great. They're amazing. And we'll continue our journey next Monday. Have a beautiful Yom Tov, a beautiful Shavuos. We didn't really speak about it today, but I guess you'll still enjoy it without us doing that.